August 23rd, 1987. Kevin Ives and his best friend Don Henry set out for what was said to be a harmless night hunting trip. The boys left their homes at slightly past midnight. 4 hours later, Stephen Scheuer spotted the boys laying across the railroad tracks that ran through their town of Bryant, Arkansas. Unfortunately, when Stephen spotted them, it was too late to stop his 6,000-ton cargo train from crushing the two boys. Subsequently, a preliminary examination of the deaths of the two friends was carried out by the coroner, and it was ruled that under the influence of marijuana, the two friends had simply fallen asleep on the railroad tracks. Doubtful of the coroner's dubious ruling, the Ives family hired a private investigator to look into the case. While looking into the case, the investigator reported meeting resistance at every end. Local police and other investigative agencies were uncooperative in contributing to the investigation. 5 months later, the families of Kevin and Don held a press conference and managed to have the case reopened. The bodies were exhumed, and it was found that there was evidence to support that the boys were already dead before they were struck by the train. Their deaths were no longer classified as accidental, but now ruled as homicides. Officially, the case still remains unsolved, and there is no shortage of loose ends. Join the theorists as they warm up to this cold case on The Boys on the Tracks.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 103, Boys on the Tracks. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
I instantly saw the live stream kicking, and I was like, what do I normally say? Oh, no.
I'm looking at myself. Who is that?
I've never done this before.
You think by 100
channeled your inner Boss Hog there.
Yeah, I was like, ooh,
them boys.
So a little rough. What's it's been a little while since we've been recording nonstop. It feels like, but not a lot. This is the first one we're all back on it for a little bit. All in studio. Zell had an epic meltdown earlier today.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I thought we were just, that's it, pod's over, no more.
Pack it up, we're done.
We had a good run, boys.
Catastrophic failure, Chernobyl.
I thought my computer, it was over. I thought my hard drive was done. I was like, oh, this is game over. This is the end of the podcast.
This is how it goes.
I'm back on some Monday night beers going too tonight. Just drinking some old Rickards Radlers.
They're delicious. Got some beers going. I got a Bad Tattoo, which is out of Penticton, B.C., a Bike Barn ISA. It's delicious.
ISA.
It's India Session Ale. It's like a lighter style beer. It's delicious.
Yeah, so it's more lighter than pale. What is lighter than pale?
A session.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know shit about beer. I just go by the label. Tastes good. That's all you can do.
It's got a cool can.
Zelly, why don't you get your finger by the cue button, because it's time for some space news.
Whoa.
NASA wants to open the International Space Station to private travelers as early as 2020. And this just in, something catastrophic happens to the International Space Station in 2020. That's my guess.
Seems
you can't
to happen
have
a lot.
Idiots aboard this thing, man. What are they thinking?
I don't know.
What? Like, they're opening it to private travelers.
Oh, okay.
As early as 2020. I'm like, you can't just have fucking bunch of dinguses up there pulling levers.
It's a bunch of rich people.
Yeah.
Don't know what they're doing.
I don't think they'll actually like be touching anything. I don't think. That'd be weird.
You're floating around in zero gravity, probably bumping into some stuff.
But
yeah.
Future headline, Starbucks opens first interstellar
interstellar drive-through.
Orbital coffee bar.
Now, I was looking, as I was reading this article, it currently had the NASA astronaut candidates must meet the following qualifications. Pass an exhaustive physical exam. 20/20 distance and near vision in each eye. Corrective lenses or corrective surgery permitted. A bachelor's degree in engineering, biological science, physical science, computer science, or mathematics, and minimum of 3 years of related professional experience obtained after degree, or at least 1,000 hours pilot in command time on a jet aircraft. You know what that means, boys? None of us are going to space. Ever.
Today, we still have till 2020. Dude, you got plenty of time.
Yeah, there's no way even in the rest of my life I could get... It took me 5 years to get a diploma in like whatever, basically general studies. So I wouldn't be able to, there's no way, like it's not a million years. Well, not with that attitude. They're going to have to drop the qualifications.
So a Bachelor of Business Administration doesn't count for space travel.
No. With a diploma majoring marketing, not happening. Sad.
I took a couple astronomy courses as electives.
Does it count? See if you can get the credits.
As soon as they start allowing electives in there, they didn't mention any electives, so.
Okay.
You know what? But maybe if you contact them and just show them your transcripts, they'll...
But you guys have the piloting jet aircraft hours down, right? You guys got those at least?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I got a lot of time on flight simulator.
I played fucking SimCopter at least 1,000 hours.
SimCopter.
At least 1,000 hours.
Do you think SimCopter translates over to the jet aircraft requirement? Is it? They're the same, right? I mean, helicopters and jets, they're the same.
It's got to be pretty much exactly the same, I think.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This was great. Did you guys see where Donald Trump kind of made reference that the moon and moon and Mars are the same thing?
Oh, I did see. I did see something about that. Yeah.
You know, aren't they?
Yeah, that's great. I don't have it up. I just remembered it now. He basically referred to NASA shouldn't focus on going to the moon. They should focus on bigger things like going to Mars, which the moon is a part of. And you're like, what?
Well, it's a
what
part of
space. Where else are they going to get all the chocolate bars from?
It's a part of space.
Yeah, it's a part of space. I could see somebody actually typing that. Like, he was talking about space, as a whole. I could see that happening. Probably somebody said that.
You can defend him. Someone will defend him.
This one was sent in on our Discord server. Mass anomaly detected under the moon's largest crater.
Yeah, I read that one. That one's cool.
A mysterious large mass of material has been discovered beneath the largest crater in our solar system. The moon's south pole, Aitken Basin, and may contain metal from the asteroid that crashed into the moon and formed the crater, according to the Bayer University study.
That's cool.
So, yeah. Secret Nazi base, secret Nazi moon base.
It's a giant metallic structure under the surface. Yeah.
Nazi moon base.
Iron Sky called it.
Yeah.
Is that the one where there's Nazis on T-Rexes and stuff? Or
no, that's the second one. I watched that one already.
Oh, it was good? Good shit?
It's fucking nuts. It was nuts. It's crazy. It wasn't great. It wasn't a great movie, but it was crazy. It's pretty nuts.
What else? I had one other thing. No, that's basically all I have. This other space news kind of sucks, so I'm not even...
Did you read the one about a self-proclaimed UFO researcher claims to have found an alien city on the dark side of the moon?
How?
UFO enthusiast Scott Waring was looking at a photo of the Giordano Bruno crater, and he pretty much says there's at least 23 structures, and they look about 100 million years old. I don't know how he got 100 million.
23.
It's a bold claim.
It was a bold claim.
How's he looking at these things?
It's got something to back that up.
Sorry, not 23 structures. It was a 23-minute video. I read that wrong. But many structures. Up to 100 million years old. I don't know where he gets the 100 million from, but
23-minute video. Wow,
dude, I don't watch anything 5 minutes or if it's 5 minutes or more. Give it. Come on, I don't got time for this.
You'll be lucky if I will click on a video. If it has a video, I won't watch it. I'm like, nope, I'll read it. Like if you put a full description in the thing, I'll read the description before I watch the video. Don't make me watch some videos.
That's all I had for space news. You got anyone else got any space news?
No, that's
any more
that's
space
it.
News?
Mm-mm.
That's it for space.
All right, well, let's get into UFO case file of the week.
Let's do a randomtron here.
Yeah, fire it up. Oh.
Where is this motherfucker? All right, here it is. Here we go. Thinking at it right now.
That's honestly the first time I've ever heard that.
Oh, you have the book.
It faxed out the whole book to me.
Faxed out the book.
The book is back. This tall tale of adventure is called Sandra and Peter Taylor. At 2:00 in the morning of the 17th of August, 1972, Peter Taylor and his wife Sandra were returning from one of Sandra's dancing engagements. Driving through the Yorkshire Dales, on the way to Harrogate, they encountered a melon-shaped object by the road. It had a fluorescent door that seemed to be opening. One of Sandra's dance colleagues was dozing in the back of the car and did not observe the object, though this may have been due to poor eyesight. Was he fucking sleeping or did he not see it? What do you mean? He's like, I was sleeping, but maybe I saw it. I got bad eyesight. It's not adding up. Shortly before they saw the UFO, the radio had filled with static. According to the reconstruction of the event, the object that had caused this and which was seen by the couple landing near the road was some 30 feet high and 60 feet long. That is a fucking huge melon.
That's fucking...
Why do you describe it as a melon? I was thinking it as the size of a melon. That's fucking huge.
No, it said melon-shaped, so it was melon-shaped.
Okay, but that's... What's a melon? It's a sphere.
It didn't say melon-sized.
Why not a giant sphere in the sky?
Giant sphere
Because a sphere would be a circle, and a melon is like...
What's a cantaloupe? Is cantaloupe not a melon?
That would be a sphere.
Cantaloupe's a round melon.
Round melon.
What kind of melons are you guys talking about?
I guess technically you'd be
talking about a watermelon.
I was thinking of watermelon.
Yeah,
watermelon shaped, kind of like
a
football.
I mean, honeydew is a melon as well. I mean,
that's true.
I'm just saying, if it's something 30 feet wide by 60 feet tall, I'm not going, hey, look at that melon. Yeah, you know what I saw? It kind of looked like a melon.
Maybe melons are important to these people. Maybe it's a fucking, you know, everyday thing for them.
Holy shit! What is that? A melon?
Yeah.
Is that a melon in the distance there? Is that a big melon? No. It's fucking the dumbest thing I ever heard. You should never refer, just a huge spherical object in the sky. Way better.
But it wasn't spherical. I'm sure they meant like it was like an oval shape. It was like this.
A huge oval-shaped object in the sky, 30 feet wide by 60 feet tall.
Yeah, that sounds better than melon. That sounds better than a melon-shaped object, yes.
They encountered a melon. Stupid. Okay.
All right, keep going. Keep going with the melon.
As the door appeared in the object, Sandra indicated that the couple entered some sort of cone of silence.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Cone of silence. That's like a level 3 wizard spell.
Okay, I get it.
Where not even normal nighttime noises could be heard, and commonly reported feature of such sightings. So when you see a melon, all goes quiet.
Hmm.
Sandra became drawn towards the object, left the car, and started to walk towards it. But Peter tried to draw her back. Ahead of them on the road had been a police car, but they could not remember passing it or where it had gone, suggesting some possible missing time period. When they arrived home, a police car near the house checked them out, presumably due to the time of the morning. The police officer suggested that perhaps they had been drinking, which was likely to be because of their state of shock, the witness thought. The Taylors made a report to the police the following morning, though both the witnesses believe that the police already knew the story that they were being told. Possibly their own police car that had been on the road had filed some report of the sighting. Incredibly, it appears that the police gave the story to the local press, and following this, the national press soon besieged the house. Although Sandra had by then left for an engagement abroad, Sandra apparently self-reported other types of clairvoyant activity and reported dreams of holding conversations with a small, leathery man with piercing blue eyes and a slit-like mouth. Dreams not dissimilar to many reported abductees. A little leathery man. After a year after the sighting, Peter was driving alone when his car stalled and cut out. Suddenly, he found himself driving on a different road, 40 miles north of Daresbury in Preston, and discovered that he had 1 hour missing time period, which has not been investigated. That's the story of the Taylors and their leathery man encounter and their fucking melon encounter.
What did the leathery man look like again?
He was a small leathery man with piercing blue eyes. Imagine me just like really suntanned. Like I'm one of those beach guys that was just sitting there
like
all
a head
up.
Like a head shorter and really tanned.
And just really tanned. So much that my skin is leather.
Do you look anything like this dude?
Oh, yeah, that's what I imagine it looks like right there.
That's him right
there? That's
perfect. All right, that's the leathery man, okay.
I wasn't there. Maybe he looked like a melon, I don't know.
Another gem by the... It's been a while since the UFO encyclopedia.
Had been popped out, yeah. This little leathery man and his fucking melon, flying melon. All right, what do we got here? What are we doing today? Boys on the tracks.
A little murder mystery.
Very, very, very interesting case. So I'll do a little synopsis, and we can kind of start breaking the story down part by part. Let's get to the boys on the tracks.
Boys on the tracks, murder mystery.
In the early hours of August 23rd, 1987, best friends... 16-year-old Don Henry and 17-year-old Kevin Ives tragically passed away. In the early morning, the driver of a 60,000-ton cargo train noticed two bodies lying side by side in a straight line on the tracks. He honked his horn, but was the figures didn't move. He hit the emergency brakes. Fuck off, Andrew, you fucking dick.
Oh, man, we need Dan back.
Yeah,
Dan,
well...
you got to read this stuff, man.
Hey, he honked. He blew the train horn. They couldn't come to a stop. Unfortunately, they ran over the bodies. The drivers got off the train. Immediately, one of the first things they noticed, obviously, the bodies were dismembered from being run over by the train. The first thing they noticed was the lack of blood. Just a little bit about Don Henry and Kevin Ives. The boys were typical teenagers. They loved cars and hunting. On the weekends, they went to double dates with their girlfriends. And the tragic evening, Kevin and Don met a group of friends at the commuter parking lot, a popular gathering place for the local teenagers in Bryant, Arkansas. Around midnight, the boys left to Don's house to get a .22 rifle to go spotlighting, which is super illegal. A method of night hunting using off-road vehicles and flashlights, transfixing the prey while one person fires at the animal. They had a quick chat with Don's father and said they would be going hunting near the train tracks, and that's the last time anyone saw the two of them alive. So why don't we break this one down a little bit? So the morning of August 23rd, 1987... we have these train conductors. I don't have their names off by hand. You can easy hashtag look that one up. I don't know. Dan? No.
Yes. Hashtag look it up.
Look it up.
Hashtag look it up.
Train conductors.
And I got to take this with a like they're going 20, they're going the regulated 25 miles per hour down this hill. And I guess how it works is the conductor, they have one person whose like job it is to like, you're conducting the train, you're watching the tracks, make sure there's nothing on it. And in the distance, he sees an object. He sees something. He's not sure what it is on the tracks. So he's looking, he's not sure. He starts firing the horn. Whatever this is doesn't move. Now, what's I don't know what 25 mile per hour is. What's that in the that's the devil's measurement. What's it in the regular?
I don't know, like 37 kilometers or something.
So it's like, it's not, they're not humming by any means. They're not humming down this track. So like
it's 40.2.
The train conductors
40.2.
Yeah, so that's not going fast. He says, with the night and the lights of the train, he saw the boys laying on the track, covered what looked like, imagine like being tucked in like a blanket with a green tarp over top of them.
Yeah.
But by the time he realized what it was and hit the emergency brakes, you know, I don't know how long it takes to stop a locomotive like that, but I imagine like kilometers.
Well, this was like a 75 car, 6,000 ton fucking locomotive.
Yeah, big. Right? It's like, it's not coming, it's not stopping in time.
Fuck no.
So right away, they call it in. They call the dispatchers. They're like, holy shit, we think we hit some body, like we think we hit some people on the track. Authorities are getting called. Like I said before, they got out. There's parts, body parts everywhere. And right away, they're like, it's not a lot of blood. Which is surprises some of the conductors. Then it goes to the police come in. Whole bunch of weird things happen. Police come in, take over the investigation. They're like, yeah, you know what? Like, it's all good. We're taking over. They tell the train conductors, yeah, there's no green tarp. You guys must have imagined that. It goes to, you know, obviously the Ives parents and the Henry parents are notified that their children have passed away. It goes to the deaths of these two boys are initially called accidental. The resident, what's his name there? Fami Malik?
Yep.
He's the
resident medical examiner.
Yeah, he's the county coroner at the time, the coroner.
Yeah, he's a coroner. There's a difference.
And he says, yeah, in his initial findings, I love this part. He says, you know, the boys must have smoked around 20 marijuana cigarettes and went comatose and laid down on the tracks to sleep and weren't awakened by the sound of the train coming. And that was the official cause of death. Any issues with that, boys, so far? What's the initial thoughts looking into this one?
Well, like, I remember when you're touching on the fact that you said there was a lack of blood. And like, to go into a little bit more detail on that, when the paramedics came on scene to examine the bodies, they noticed, like, obviously there was a lack of blood, but the blood that they did have looked a lot, like, it resembled a lot more of, like, venous blood. And, like, if you know the difference between, like, venous blood and arterial blood, right? Arterial blood is the blood that's carrying oxygen, right? Yeah. It's carrying all the oxygen to your main arteries. And venous blood is the blood that's coming back to the heart. You know what I mean? Deoxygenated, then your heart and your lungs oxygenate it and pump it back.
Right.
And all the blood that they were noticing was very dark blue and like very thick and jam-like, which is very indicative of venous blood, right? So non-oxygenated blood, which means that like obviously these people have not been oxygenating very well for a long time, which means they've been dead for a while, most likely, right? Like you wouldn't see that in a freshly, you know, like you got to think about it, right? If these two guys fell asleep on these tracks and it was indeed the fucking the train that killed them, these people would be fucking sawed in half, right?
Yeah.
Clean cuts in half, and they would just be pouring bright red fucking arterial blood.
I think most of the people who get run over by trains, it's like a twisting. I don't know if they'd be cut in half.
Well, and don't they
100%? No, no, no.
They
would
front
be severed
scoop,
by the train.
Like that front
100%.
Scoop on those trains.
Well, how were
they
laying?
Or not.
Well, were they laying across the tracks, or were
they
laying?
They were laying
parallel?
Across the tracks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they were, and again, they were severed. That's what happened to these bodies, right?
So, how long would they have had to been dead?
Well, that's a good question, right? It varies. It would be tough to put a timeline on it, right? Without actually having the autopsy reports. I tried really hard to find the real autopsy reports
right
from this, but They've been fucking buried. I wonder why.
I wonder why. Yeah, train tracks are 4 feet, 8 inches wide in the U.S. So how old these kids are? 17. So they're like probably like almost 6 feet or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're by all accounts, they're no one was like, and one of the boys was abnormally small. Like the by all accounts, they're just normal.
I was just trying to see like where the train would hit them first, but if they're like the guy said, it all depends on exactly where they were laying.
I think it would be like head and like shins would be gone.
Yeah.
So right away, something fishy to me is that the train, like again, 25 miles per hour, 41 or whatever kilometers an hour is not that fast. And these guys had spotlights on the front of the train. And these conductors who are like, that's their job, is like, they're like, they see stuff at night. So it's not like this is his first time being on a train at night. He says, I saw these boys covered in a green tarp. They were covered. And the police are going, nah, they weren't. And it comes out later that they found a piece of tarp, like at the crime scene, at the scene of the accident. They found a piece of green tarp. So right away to me, I'm like, well, what the fuck? Like, why? Like, what's the, I believe the conductor when he says that if he saw that, you're not going that fast, right? So it's like, it's not, so like, it'd be very distinct to see two bodies, but the description of like, there's two bodies and they're covered in a tarp. Like, they're covered in like what looks to be a green tarp. Now that could have been a blanket, whatever, right?
Covered
but
in
like,
something.
To me, I'm like, it's so weird.
Well, even if they saw them, like I would like to know how long it would actually take this fucking train to come to a complete stop.
Oh, it said somewhere in there. I want to say it was like, I'll look it up. Keep going.
So, it could take like upwards to like maybe 3/4 of a mile to stop, because even going slow, 25 miles per hour, which I don't think trains actually travel that fast. It's just them moving, but especially like through a town or somewhere like that, they wouldn't be moving that fast, I imagine. So even if they are going that fast, it takes a lot of distance for them to stop.
Totally. Okay, here it is.
Like, that's what I'm
saying. So average freight train, 90 to 100 cars or 90 to 120 cars, a mile and a half going at 55 miles. So
half that. So like half a mile. That. Half
so,
it.
You know, so like, you know, a while. So let's say
you need half a mile to stop, and by the time you saw something on the tracks,
too late.
It's too late.
And to react. Yeah. Well, it's and think late. About it, like it's 4 a.m. in the morning when this supposedly happened. You know what I mean? How far ahead are you able to see? And for the most part, you probably just think it's a fucking tarp on there, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't know what it was till it was like too late. You're blowing the horn.
Exactly.
Sometimes like people do that. They'll lay on tracks as like chicken with the train, and they'll get up. You know, within like a couple seconds, they'll roll out of the way. Right, so they'll blow their horn. So by that time, you're blowing your horn, you're hoping the people move, but then you slam the emergency brake. It's way too late.
Oh man, they do that a lot in Maple Ridge down here. Sometimes it doesn't work out well in their favor.
You'd be surprised how many people get killed by trains over there. Because a lot of times when they're when they're going slow, people like try and jump on them or jump through them, and they trip and they get run over. And
I've seen two since I've been down here, and I've only been down here for 3 months.
Yeah, my uncle was a conductor for CN Rail. And he says like 25 people in his career, he got ran over by a train.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And most of them accidental, like trying to get on the train or jump through it while it's moving slow and you trip. But
fucking natural selection. If you're dumb enough to do that, then that's the way she goes.
Yeah, yeah, these guys, they're laying on the... Okay, so we got a train, got two guys on the tracks. The train can't stop, runs them over. They end up being two best friends who are out hunting at night.
Yeah.
What? Well, why are we talking?
They obviously
about
just got way too high. Like, you know what I mean? They got way too stoned, and everybody knows that weed sedates you and knocks you out and makes it so you can't hear a giant fucking 6,000-pound or ton fucking freight train coming barreling down on you. So that's normal.
Now, obviously the parents, they didn't know a lot about like marijuana and the effects of marijuana. So right away they were questioning. They were saying, well, we don't think our kids did that. They weren't those type of kids. We don't think that they would do marijuana. And they're like, and how much? Like 20 marijuana cigarettes. Zell, how many? Okay. You're a resident marijuana expert. Oh, man.
So I read this. You guys sent me some stuff and I read through it. And that was the first. Okay. The first cause was, oh, they smoked too many joints. They decide to lay on the road, maybe to lay on the tracks, maybe play chicken with the train. And they were so stoned that they just didn't hear a fucking freight train barreling down at them. Honking its horn is unbelievable. This is at a time when, you know, marijuana, like...
War on drugs.
The war on drugs is at a peak. People think that marijuana is... Some people could be convinced about this because a lot of people hadn't smoked, like, don't smoke it or didn't smoke it. But for, like, to smoke 20 joints, first of all, you couldn't smoke 20 joints. I guess if the weed was just, like, bush weed and, like, it was no... But it would take you, like, no, you gotta smoke for... that, and that wouldn't be that strong. The only way I could ever see you getting so intoxicated by marijuana that you could not get up or move out of the way is if you ate like a massive amount of edibles, like a massive amount, like a tub of butter, to the point when like you're probably like your heart would be like you'd be fucked.
And like a tub of
Tub of weed butter, like, or like a whole like fucking bottle of extract.
A tub of butter.
That's the only way you could be that stoned.
And then you'd have to lay down on a train track.
Well, if you had that, go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, like, you know what I mean? Out of, especially now that, like, pot's legalized, right? In my field, we obviously are seeing more and more people using pot.
Yeah.
And, like, when we do get overdoses on THC, and if you can't see them, I'm doing the air quotations.
Yeah.
Because you can't really overdose on it. You'll see people presenting with, like, almost like seizure-like activity. Like, they can't control their body.
They're fucked.
Getting these full-body twitches. And, like, that's 99% of the time, that's from edibles and from the tinctures, right?
Yeah, the oil, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've never heard in my career or anybody else's anyone ever having any effects like that.
I don't think you could actually physically smoke that much weed to get that stoned. Like, you just... Your throat would be, like, shredded by smoking that
much. Oh, God. Feel terrible.
and obviously the parents they had their questions about that situation, right?
Yeah. So
the medical examiner, there were some red flags that were coming up that just didn't really make sense, especially with like the paramedics reports. You know what I mean? There were some people who also like witnessed some inconsistencies with the police reports. And from what I understand, they decided to, you know, hire their own examiner to get a second opinion.
Right. Yeah, and this Fahmy Malik, by all accounts, was an absolute dick to the parents when they were asking, like, well, how many milligrams of marijuana, of THC was found? Like, he was not helpful at all, and he was not helpful to the new, like, independent. He wouldn't release any of the, like, information to him off the bat.
Well, he actually, like, when the parents came to talk to him, the only rebuttal he had was the autopsy pictures and the pictures of them on the tracks. And he kept trying to show them. And the parents are like, we don't want to fucking see this.
Yeah.
And the only his only rebuttal to that situation was the toxicology reports, by saying, no, there is THC in their system.
Okay.
So let's get into Fahmy Malik a little bit here.
Yeah, this is crazy.
So Fahmy Malik, he is, you know, Dan, was he the county coroner or was he the just the coroner?
I see.
He's a medical examiner.
Yeah. I thought he was a coroner.
No, he was the county medical examiner.
So this isn't his first issue with, you know, isn't the first red flag. I've got a couple of the highlighted cases.
Ooh.
He once a man who was decapitated, Fahmy Malik stated that he most likely died of natural causes and that his dog chewed his head off, resulting in the release of the prime suspect. So
what he ruled that one as actually is the man died of an ulcer.
Yeah.
He said the man died of an ulcer, and then he tested the stomach contents of the man's dog, and they came back positive for brain matter.
Oh, crazy. Yeah.
And he said the dog chewed his head off.
Jesus.
Which there are more records of that actually happening.
What kind of dog was this?
Okay, so let's give him this one. Let's get on to the next one. The Albright case on June 28, 1985, Raymond P. Albright, 50, of Mountain Home, was found in his yard dead of gunshot wounds. Albright had been arrested the night before on charges of theft. Malik ruled his death a suicide. Right? Okay, shot himself. Okay. Albright had been shot 5 times. All 5 shots were in the chest, and the weapon was a high-powered pistol.
Set it up on a timer, and...
Well...
Celebrate suicide.
Elaborate suicide.
Malik's attorney on that case stated that the pistol was most likely a semi-automatic, capable of rapid fire... And the pattern of wounds suggested that the shots were fired in multiple succession. So he sat there.
Boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, 5 times.
No, slower. Boom, I missed.
Yeah.
Get it this time.
Well, they say by the shots, they say like the pattern was like he went up. But if anyone knows how a gun recoils, when you shoot, your hand would go. I don't think you would have the gumption to hold... Be able to hold the gun and the recoil and take the pain of getting shot 5 times.
What?
Suspect.
Yeah, like
little suspect.
All right, let's get to this one. He once misread a medical form and accused another coroner of killing a patient. He made an accusation that. Who is it? On June 14th, 1989, Andrew Smith, 59, who police said had shot himself, was declared brain dead at University Hospital in Little Rock. Life support was withdrawn. A week later, Malik told officers that the order to end life support was given by a deputy county coroner, Mark Malcolm, who had not consulted Smith's family, and that he ruled that Malcolm killed Andrew Smith. He ruled it a homicide. So Malcolm... Smith was going to be charged. During the investigation, they looked at the paperwork, and the director of the state health department said that Malik apparently had mistaken the symbol to mean without family consultation that was checked. He thought that meant the check was mean they weren't talked to. So he inappropriately just was like, yeah, this guy killed someone. So it, you know, that's we're getting to see a picture of this guy. The Stevens case, August 18th. This is later on, 1990. Gregory Stevens, 25, of Hot Springs, was fatally shot while on his front porch of his home. Prosecutor Paul R. Bozen brought Ernest D. Lemons, 21, a parolee, to trial on a murder charge. Witnesses said that Stevens had been shot from the street about 40 feet away. Multiple witnesses. When Malik took the stand, he said that Stevens had been shot point-blank range, causing Deputy Prosecutor Bruce McPhee to have to ask for the charges to be dismissed based on Malik's evidence.
Crazy.
He ruled a shotgun blast to the back of the head, a suicide. He's ruled a drowning. Someone was found in a water of a pond, and he ruled it a suicide by drowning, but he was also shot multiple times. Like, it just, this guy is insane with
he ruled a woman an accidental death from a fall from a porch which was 9 inches high. And she ruled that an accidental death. And her autopsy report said she had multiple critical injuries, including a broken neck, broken nose, ribs, cheeks, puncture wounds.
Like, wait, so
you know what I mean?
Like, nine inches, was the last step that killed her. Not when they pushed her all the way down the stairs. It was only the last step.
Yeah, the very last rise. It was a 9-inch a 9-inch deck into a 25-foot hole.
One thing that Fahmy Malik did do is that back in the day, he made a calling on an anesthesiologist.
A nurse.
Yeah, a nurse.
Anesthetist.
Anesthetist. Yeah. That's one. What did I say?
You said an anesthesiologist.
Oh, sorry. They're fucking all A words, bud. I'm surprised I got that one out.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
She, by all accounts, kind of botched. Someone came in. There was a 21-year-old African-American man. There was a car of some white teens hurling racial slurs at him. Someone threw a beer bottle at him. He picked up a chunk of concrete. He threw it at the car, broke through the window, and it hit a girl in the back seat. They rushed her to hospital. By all accounts, she was totally fine. She had some pretty bad injuries, but they were going to do non-critical surgery to fix her nose, fix some teeth. When she got in the bed, all her vitals were good. They had the breathing tube. I don't know what they're called into the nose. And they wanted to repair her nose now, so they needed to replace the breathing tubes from the nose to the throat. And by all accounts, this nurse couldn't do it and kind of botched it. A doctor had to step in and do it for her, put the breathing tube in. And then there was no record of how long she was with oxygen, and she later went brain dead and passed away.
Mm. Yeah, she was going endotracheal. She tried to intubate the patient, and she kept missing the endotracheal tube, and she went hypoxic for like over 5 minutes, which, yeah, you know what I mean? Your brain's not getting oxygenation. And then it says she just slowly went bradycardic, which means her heart started to slow down, and then she just died.
Now, this nurse was suspended. She was not allowed to practice anymore until Mr. Malik, got a hold of this case, and he made a finding that she died from the injuries from getting hit with the brick, causing this 21-year-old man to be charged with murder.
Huh.
Who was this nurse? I can't remember her name. I know who her son is.
She's got a pretty famous son. Is it Susie Kelly?
Susie Kelly. Her son is then Governor Bill Clinton.
Virginia Dwyer Kelly.
Yeah, and her son is then Governor Bill Clinton.
Mm.
So Fahmy Malik makes a call that essentially wins favor with Bill by kind of saving his mom's career.
So the Ives and Henry family kind of get drift of all this Malik guy's fucking malpractice, right? They start cluing in and realizing that this guy's dropped the ball on several occasions. He's got tons of lawsuits against him. You know what I mean? He's got quite the shady history. And they decide to get their own second opinion. So they hire their own examiner from out of state. He comes in completely, you know, unbiased, and starts going over all of Malik's stuff, and he does his own examination of the bodies and goes over everything. And he starts noticing stuff like this Malik guy is completely out to lunch. He realized that Kevin Ives died from blunt force trauma, most likely from a butt end of a rifle to the head. He noticed that Kevin or Don Henry had a stab wound in his back between his shoulder blades.
What?
He realized things like there was part of fucking Kevin Ives' foot still at the crime scene when he went over the crime scene. They missed it.
Sloppy.
He also wanted to go and do, you know, further examination to prove, you know what I mean, blunt force trauma, and he couldn't because the boys' skulls were all chopped to fucking pieces for absolutely no reason. He said there's absolutely no reason why a medical examiner would mutilate bodies like
so that. So when he went to go do a second autopsy, he couldn't because the skulls were gone.
They're all fucked. Malik chopped them all into pieces.
That's fucking bananas.
Right? So everybody's getting all... Everybody's like, okay, this is fucked. This Malik guy's completely botched the situation. He's got a fucking massive history of malpractice. We want this guy out, you know, boot him. And what ends up happening to Fahmy Malik? What's his punishment for this?
He gets a promotion and a raise by Governor Bill Clinton.
Gets a fucking $14,000 promotion. They say, oh, you know what? Fahmy's been overworked.
And underpaid.
There's a little bit... he's overworked, he's underpaid, and there's kind of a language gap there. So, you know what I mean? I think a lot of the issues have come up because, you know, Fahmy's from Egypt and English is his second language.
They literally brought all this evidence to Governor Bill Clinton, and he said, well, I think this is more to do that he's overworked and underpaid.
Oh, my God.
You're like, it's what?
Fucking bananas. Like,
this guy's doing a terrible job. So, I couldn't imagine being the parents of these boys, but they held in there. They kept trying to raise, public interest in it. And kudos to them with getting special investigators at their own cost and everything. They got this case reopened. Is this where Dan Harmon comes in, Andrew?
Yeah. So
because
right at the beginning,
he introduces himself. He goes to them once the case gets reopened. Dan Harmon swoops in to be like, I'm here to help.
I'm the prosecutor. Well, he was the lead prosecutor in the situation, right? And he actually volunteered to be lead prosecution on this fucking investigation.
Yeah, he told the parents, right? This is bullshit. What's happening to your kids? You know, like, I'm here. Like, we got to get justice for your kids. So he's charged with a grand jury. Dan, I'm not sure what a grand jury is there. We have coroner's inquests here, and I imagine it's similar to a coroner's inquest. But
like
I don't really...
Are you talking about like a grand jury?
Yeah, I don't know what a grand jury is.
I don't know off the top of my head, but the difference between a grand jury and a regular jury
Dan doesn't know?
Nope.
Oh, shit. Ooh. We're going to pull that t-shirt off TeePublic at the end of the night.
Here it is. As Google says, a grand jury is a group of citizens empowered by law to conduct legal proceedings and investigate potential criminal conduct and determine whether criminal charges should be brought. A grand jury may subpoena physical evidence or a person to testify.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of similar to a...
We could change the t-shirt to say Google knows now.
Yeah, Google knows.
Excellent. So yeah, so Dan Harmon comes in. He gets a grand jury. He's in charge of putting this grand jury together. Then what's up with Mr. Dan Harmon there, Andrew?
Well, right away, he's pretending like he's looking out for the family's best interest, right? He's, you know what, I'm going to go to bat for you guys. I'm going to do my best to, you know, advocate for the boys because, you know what I mean? They can't speak for themselves, and we're going to get to the bottom of this. You know, good guy Dan over here. Turns out, as soon as it goes to fucking court, he does the complete opposite. He starts backing Fahmy Malik 100%. He starts advocating that Fahmy Malik was completely right in his decisions, that the boys did probably smoke only, you know, smoke the 20 marijuana cigarettes, and shit got a little wild and decided to have a nap on the fucking railroad tracks. He saw no reason to suspect any type of murder.
Now, not only that, but as he's putting together this grand jury, people start coming out of the woodworks that have information that say, you know, I have information about the murder of these boys. One of these was Kevin.
McCaskey. Kevin McCaskey.
Kevin McCaskey. He comes forward and he says
McCaskill. Kevin McCaskill.
And he says he was not only does he have information, but he's willing to testify, and he was involved in the murder of these boys. So surely he brings this to Dan Harmon, and surely Dan Harmon gets them all set up to testify. Does he ever testify, Andrew?
No, he doesn't. He did actually pass a lie detector test, though.
Yeah, and then what happened? Did he leave? They just couldn't get him to testify, or...
I'm pretty sure he got stabbed, I think, 22 times in his garage.
Yeah. Ooh, weird.
Just 22?
That's kind of weird. Just 22 times.
A casual 22 stabs.
Now,
yeah, but you know what I mean? If good old Fahmy was looking after that, I think that would just be your old-fashioned suicide, wouldn't it?
by all accounts, I mean, this Kevin guy, he lived a little bit of a rough life. So it purely could be coincidental that he, after he says he have his information on these murders, he's stabbed 22 times. Now, another boy, one of the boy's friends, says he went with them to the tracks that night. And he says he saw the boys with the police officers, and he was going to testify that, you know, they were there snooping for drugs or something, and something went amiss, and the boys got murdered. He goes to Dan Harmon, and surely he gets to testify, right? Andrew, this young kid, the friend, does he testify?
Turns out he doesn't.
Whoa.
That's shocking.
What happens to him? There's no way he dies, too, right?
Goes to Mexico.
That would be too weird.
Goes to Mexico. On vacation. Never comes back?
No, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
He's dead.
Classic. He died. He dies in a motorcycle accident, a high-speed motorcycle accident, getting crashed, and he crashes into the back of the semi. And there's accounts that he was being followed at high speeds by another car.
Well, it's cool, too, because he actually gives a little bit more insight on the situation, because he actually reported that the boys witnessed... You know, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but they witnessed some things going on in the tracks that just, you know, it seemed a little abnormal. They were confronted by a group of people. They hightailed it back into town because they knew they saw something they shouldn't have, where two police cars showed up and grabbed Kevin and Don, beat them unconscious, and threw them in the back of their car.
Huh.
Yeah.
And he turns up dead. Now.
Dead.
We get a
great... Like, there are reports of him talking to his mom, being like, I'm being followed. Do not be surprised if I do not live past, you know, this weekend.
Kevin Coney, that was his name. Keith Coney,
yeah. That sounds right.
Now, we also have Gregory Collins. Gregory Collins approaches Dan Harmon, and he says, listen, you know, I have information to present that I can tell you that these boys died from gunshot wounds to the head. Right? Or these boys died from gunshot wounds and they were attacked. And does he get to testify?
Nope.
No, before he testifies, he dies from a gunshot wound to the head, which is ruled by as a suicide by none other than...
Rami Malek.
Wow, what a connection there.
I'm not hearing every anything. I'm not hearing anything suspicious here at all. Nothing. This is
every single person that Dan Harmon gets... to like that has good evidence on this case turns up dead. So then all of a sudden, like let's get into Dan Harmon. So this guy is obviously an upstanding citizen, isn't he? What's he doing nowadays?
I'm pretty sure he is still in jail.
Yeah.
Dan Harmon's dead. I'm pretty sure he died.
I don't know if he's dead or not, but he's a bona fide scumbag. 100% legit. He's been arrested numerous times for selling methamphetamine to kids, you know, getting caught with drug dealing cocaine, eliciting prostitutes. The guy, this was while he was in office as the prosecutor, as the special prosecutor. He beaten his wife, all this shit. This guy's a scumbag. Now, it seems to me that he put himself in the position to do this to identify witnesses of this case. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, because he did. He volunteered for this job.
Yeah, he wasn't appointed. He put himself in a position to, you know, be able to track down witnesses and loose ends in this case. Now, we have this Suzanne. I love this one. Suzanne, I got to pull up the tab where I have her information. Oh, where is she? Suzanne. Come on, Suzanne.
Suzanne.
I'll never find it now. I was looking at other stuff and then I'll never find it. Where's Suzanne? I know it's in here. Charlene Wilson. This is great. So, Charlene Wilson.
Jumping ahead.
Charlene Wilson. I'm going to jump ahead on this one a little bit. Charlene Wilson is an ex-girlfriend of Dan Harmon's. Wilson is serving 20 years to life for drug convictions in Arkansas. After she breaks up with Dan Harmon, and this is great. This is unbelievable. You know who is the prosecutor that is the head prosecutor while she's being convicted?
Oh, I couldn't even guess.
Dan Harmon.
Hmm.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise.
She comes out And she says, in custody, I was with Dan Harmon and this Kevin how do I say his last name, Andrew?
McCaskill.
On the tracks that night. And not only does she go that far, she says she implicates herself. She says that she had a knife in her boot and she was the one that stabbed one of the boys in the back as Kevin and Don Henry or Dan Harmon beat the hell out of these two boys and leave them on the tracks. And no one gave a shit.
Well, she actually ended up writing her confession down after being prompted by Kevin Ives' mom. Right, because Kevin Ives' mom heard that she might have had more evidence on this situation, had a conversation with her. She wrote her confession down in 2015 and got it submitted to the now prosecutor to get the ball back in motion to see if we could, you know, come to an actual conviction here. Because obviously we have enough red flags. You've got Dan Harmon in jail right now for drug-related offenses. You know, all the dominoes are getting lined up. So she brings it to the prosecutor. And, like, oddly enough, I know it sounds pretty crazy, but this prosecutor who is now in charge, believe it or not, just happens to be related to somebody.
Who's he related to?
He's Dan Harmon's nephew.
Huh.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Like, how is that not a conflict of interest?
I don't know, man. So now we have somebody who's openly putting Dan Harmon at this scene, right? So we have somebody saying, okay, I see Dan Harmon, I see Keith McCaskill or Kevin McCaskill, whatever the fuck his name is, and they've got the boys, they've beaten the boys, we've stabbed them in the back. We know that Dan Harmon is being currently incarcerated for drug-related offenses. What do we think that these boys saw that put them in this situation?
I don't think they saw anything. I have a theory on this. So in that area, this is a known area, like, and around the area where, you know, it's not crazy to see low-flying aircrafts with their lights off, because this is where this is in the area where, like, Barry Seal.
Mina, it's called.
Yeah, Barry
it's
Seal.
Mina.
And if you don't know, there's a movie on him. He worked for the drug cartel, allegedly backed by the CIA, doing drug drops into Arkansas. There was a movie with Tom Cruise where they do the same thing, low-flying aircrafts, and they just drop the drugs out of the plane.
American-made or something.
Yeah.
American-made.
So something. I think there's rumors running rampant in town that this area has been set up as a huge, like, drug operation backed by then-Governor Bill Clinton. And I think it was so well-known in these areas that these people are doing these drug drops that these kids were sitting on the tracks and they're like, you know what? They're fucking dumb kids. That, you know what? Like, I could have seen myself doing something stupid like this too when I was that age of being like, hey, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get like we'll find a brick of drugs when these things go by this area. Right? And I think, you know, maybe they had the night or maybe for whatever reason, they're on the tracks.
So they've seen something
and,
they should have.
I think they went out there because they knew the area. Either they heard it through people at school, someone knew, right? And so they went out that area looking for drugs, and they happened to run into people picking up drugs. I think that that's what happened. They got caught, and these people see each other, right? And they're like, now we got to do something with these kids.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind because, like, yes, I know there's tons of mistakes that have made. These aren't the smartest criminals in the world, but, like, you know what I mean? You want to get rid of these kids. We want to kill them, and we want to keep our drug ring under wraps and keep it quiet. Here's a great idea. Let's murder them and then put them on the fucking railroad tracks so they get dismembered and flung around the fucking forest. Like, could we not have come up with a better fucking plan here?
Seems like you could have disposed of the body's a little different than, I don't know.
Yeah, you could have been a little bit more inconspicuous, I'd say, like just a tad.
Maybe there's that bold that they just knew that they could get away with it.
Well, if you have Fami Malik in your pocket, right? And there's other boys. Billy Hainline and Dennis Decker out of Oklahoma in June 25th, 1984, died the exact same way. Exact same way. Mysteriously, they were ruled no foul play at the initially, died laying across the tracks in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't. And you know what? Like, I don't know if you want to talk about it yet, but we actually have who is my personal favorite witness to this situation has also come forward.
Let's hear it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's get into that.
None other than Billy Jack Haynes. Any of you guys, does that name ring a bell to anybody?
Billy Jack Haynes.
He's a professional wrestler.
Oh, shit.
He was a title contender in the 80s. You know what I mean? He was kind of a big deal. He was never really, like, I don't know. He was never really the top tier talent. You know what I mean? Like, he was
a jobber.
He was a little bit more than a jobber. He was used to put guys over, but he still, you know what I mean? At least he was having the title fights. I guess you could say he was a little bit maybe more of a heel. But he came forward, and I think it was in like the early 2000s, saying that he actually worked for Dan Harmon and Bill Clinton, saying that he transported and trafficked large quantities of cocaine throughout the United States of America. He said that he worked with Barry Seal in Arkansas. He said that he was there present in August of 1987 at the murder of Kevin Ives and Don Henry. He says he was contacted by Bill Clinton himself.
To not say anything?
He was contacted by Bill Clinton himself to oversee this transaction of, you know what I mean, whatever happened.
Like, he was muscle. He was muscle.
Exactly what he was. Like, he got a phone call from Bill Clinton, like, hours after wrestling King Kong Bundy.
Pull his picture up again. Look at this guy.
Yeah, like,
he's a beast.
I lost him. I'll get it back.
He's getting a phone call, like, minutes after stepping out of the ring, wrestling King Kong Bundy, being like, hey, buddy, I know you're in Detroit. We need you to fly to Arkansas. We need you to fucking flex your muscles and be a big guy to watch over this fucking case. So he comes out. Sorry, it was a video, and actually in 2009, he comes out and goes off and starts saying, I was there. I witnessed it. Don Harmon is fucking guilty of this. These boys were murdered. They were out spotlighting deer. He's closed.
Does this look? Hell no.
Okay. But why? Look at that guy, man.
Guy's a beast.
So I do got to get into a little bit of that, though, because here's a little background on our buddy Billy Jack Haynes. He's a known diagnosed sociopath. He's currently been on and been addicted to methadone, heroin, fentanyl. He makes this video where if you got a chance, type it in and watch this fucking video where he shoots on Vince McMahon. And he goes off about for 45 minutes about how he explains that he's the one that created WrestleMania, that Vince McMahon is a murderer. He's responsible for killing Rowdy Piper. He's responsible for killing fucking Owen Hart.
Maybe he is.
But I'm telling you got to watch this video because the guy's absolutely insane. He's in the middle of like shooting on guys, and he'll just stop and he'll stare at the camera and scream, bombshell tonight! And just fucking keep going. And as like people pass him by as he's cutting this fucking hot fucking take. Like, it's fucking hilarious. So I think there is a little bit of fucking truth sprinkled into what he has to say, but he's also a fucking raving lunatic.
So he's not fully trustworthy, what you're saying.
This is true.
And
also,
how long after the murders did he come out and say that?
See, that's a good question. I have it written down here, and it's from a video in 2009. So
that, well after.
I'm not sure if that's accurate, though, because I remember watching a news broadcast that looked way more ghetto than 2009.
Now, also, the thing is, I always find it weird when people are like willing to implicate themselves and people don't take them seriously. You know what I mean? Like, if that's true, like, guess what? He's in some trouble too. Like, he's not just like, here it is and I'm stepping away. It's like, no. Like, you were involved. You're now in trouble. Like, you've implicated yourself.
Yeah.
Let's go. So I think and if you pass a lie detector and you're implicating yourself, I'm like, you know what? Like, that's some compelling evidence. I mean, the lie detector doesn't always work, especially on a sociopath and stuff. But I'm like, why are you implicating yourself, right?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he wants to be relevant again. Maybe he felt like that was That was his opportunity. I'm not sure why he would choose. I guess that case wasn't obscure. It was pretty high profile at the time. But
yeah, it's now. So let's go back to the grand jury. So despite Dan Harmon's absolute every effort to railroad this thing, in my opinion, by, you know, outing witnesses and, you know, I think he was either, if he wasn't directly involved, he was pointing the finger at who needs to go, who's got things that can hurt big people. The grand jury announced that the boys' deaths may have been involved, like been related to drug trafficking. That's what they find. They're like, these kids, they didn't pass out. Like, everything points to that these kids were murdered and probably has something to do with drug trafficking. Following this announcement, Sheriff Steed, who's the sheriff at the time, he refuses any funds to aid in any further investigation. Steed also lied about where they had sent the boys' clothes for examination. Steed sent the clothes to the Arkansas State Crime Lab, not to the FBI, as he was supposed to do. Like, I'm like, there's all these people like in these positions that are just like, it's one of those ones where you're like, well, this seems crazy because everyone would have to be involved. And this is one of those ones where the evidence points to all these people all involved, like at all levels of government, levels of law enforcement, like everyone was on the take. It's crazy.
So they must have been bringing in mad amount of cash or drugs for cash.
Well, dude, Barry Seals was bringing, like, the amount of money that guy was transporting in drugs is insane. So he died. I think he died before this, but just because he died doesn't mean that the operations that, you know, started with him stop, right?
Yeah.
He's just one guy. I don't think
just one guy.
There's still other people that worked with him.
Well, I was just going to say, like, as far as theories go, I actually was able to track down on Reddit Linda Ives, who is Kevin Ives' mom. She did an AMA on Reddit, and she's built her own fucking case and her own theories as to what she thinks happens. And she's still investigating this. She's still fighting to have this have their deaths be ruled a murder.
Huh.
Fucking crazy. And like, here, I'll read, like, somebody asked her on Reddit, they're like, what do you think happened? And like, this is pretty cool, and it's along the lines of what a lot of us are thinking. But she says the drug drops at that site, which is known as A12, were arriving weekly, and they weren't just drugs, they included money as well. The drop was made the week before the boys were killed, and it went missing, and the people on the ground were on high alert and trying to find out what happened to it. Kevin and Don came walking down the tracks. They grabbed them and interrogated them for information they did not have. They were beaten and stabbed and put on the railroad tracks, covered with a tarp in hope that the train crew would not realize they had run over anybody.
Okay, I like that. I like that because if it went missing a week earlier, I forgot that a week earlier to the boys' deaths, police in the area responded to a call of a guy in military fatigues. And when they got there, like into the woods in that area, whoever was in military fatigues turned with had an assault rifle, turned and started firing on law enforcement, left in the woods, and they never tracked him down again. Now, that same day that the boys died, there was reports of a man in military fatigues being seen in the area again.
Yeah, I read that too, but that should have been a bigger story.
Yeah.
Well, I'd see, that's a problem. I tried looking into that too, and I couldn't find any articles to substantiate it, right? Like, it seems pretty crazy.
Yeah, I almost felt like that the guy in the army fatigues was like a fictitious addition to the story, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, it's in police reports and stuff. So,
oh, is it?
Yeah, it's like you can pull up police reports from it. So I'm like,
oh shit! That's what I was looking for. I couldn't find it either.
But okay,
the week before, I'll send you guys the link. But then, like, let's get into some of the other people on the list. As I found my other tab. Another recipient of a subpoena to appear before the grand jury, Daniel Booney Bearden, disappeared mysteriously. He's never been found. Another death connected with the case, 21-year-old Jeffrey Edward Rhodes, who was found in a landfill in April 1989. Like, the just list goes on of all these people that are connected to this are just dropping dead, right?
And no convictions.
No convictions to this day.
Bananas.
It it's just there's corruption written all over this one. It's so blatant to see that people were covering it up. To what extent and to what level is hard to gauge. Dan, what do you think?
Well, personally, I think that this is a really it is an unsolved case, but for me it's open and shut. It's pretty much I would come to the conclusion the same that Ives's mother came to.
For sure.
Is that there was an extensive drug ring operation, because pretty much everyone in this story is involved with drugs.
Yeah.
Like Dan Harmon has a drug history, his girlfriend has a drug history, all of the the sheriffs and stuff would be in on it because they would have to be in on it. Like Fahmy Malik has been around for a long time, and coroners are not always the most upstanding of great people. They hold a lot of power, especially when you can tell, you can rule a gunshot, an obvious murder as a suicide, avoiding any investigation of any kind or any type of criminal or forensic investigation. You just rule it as a suicide. So he would probably be in on it too. So
well, how far do you think it goes up, right? Because I think it's pretty well rumored. Like even before I looked into this, that Bill Clinton kind of likes his nose candy a little bit,
for sure.
Yeah, but even if that was the case, I don't think he'd be involved with this, because most of these guys don't seem involved with cocaine. A lot of them seem involved with methamphetamines. Like that's a little bit of a different racket than the cocaine one that was going down. And the whole Mina connection is a nice one, but the whole operation that was running out there, it was like CIA run, and the CIA usually runs a pretty tight ship. They wouldn't have really brought in I don't think they would have brought in local law enforcement or the tiny kind of gangsters that you would kind of have running methamphetamine, things like that, because then that's just more people that know and more things that can go wrong. So I don't think that would really think. Now, whether there were actual other drug operations running at the same time as the Mina operation was going around, that could happen as well, because Arkansas is a pretty nice place to fly out of if you're going to South America or Central America. So totally possible.
There's also Braden, have you ever heard of Terry Reed? Have you come across him at all?
No.
He's well, governor he's, or something, isn't he?
So Terry Reed was a pilot that worked with Barry Seal.
Ah, different guy.
And he wrote a book called Compromised. And in this book, he tells of meeting then Governor Clinton and other national names, which he didn't, I don't have written down, but Clinton obviously is an important one in the story. And he mentions that Clinton was promised the presidency if he went along and allowed them to use the Arkansas base. And this is all while he was the governor. And you know what I mean? Like this is in this Terry Reed guy's book, who is known to have worked with Barry Seal. And you know what I mean? Like if you would have just read this book, you would have been like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like, let's have some evidence. Give me something. But then when you think about him saying that and how that fucking ties into this entire case, it's pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, like if that would have been the case, then yeah, he could have been in with it, because the Iran-Contra thing was like a whole big, big deal. And if he had his contacts with Oliver North and kind of that kind of thing, like all running that stuff in, they probably would have contacted him. Like maybe they would have said like, hey, just if anything kind of weird going around in here, just ignore it. Just let it slide. I mean, that's possible, but I don't think that had really much to do with the kids dying.
Well, I think that some high powered people that Clinton was in their pockets, and they're like, hey, listen, buddy, we're going to be running some things through Arkansas. We need you to turn a blind eye to this. Next thing you know, the people who are doing this are involved in a fucking murder, and Clinton's like, what the fuck? We need to cover this up. My name's kind of attached to this. I want to run for fucking president one day. We need to make sure that this blows over. We'll use my medical examiner to make sure that things go properly.
Right. Now, if Clinton, because, now you're getting into a big money conspiracy, controlling of politics.
But why would they do such a shitty job?
Yeah.
Well, like, why would, shitty why, jobs
why
all
would
time.
The guy try to go and be like, hey, these guys smoke 20 marijuana cigarettes? If you're a president who likes
cigarettes.
Well, if you're a president who likes his nose candy, then I think you would know that that kind of story wouldn't fly.
So why would President Clinton associate himself with Fahmy Malik, given his fucking history?
Well, you already said that they're already associated because he saved his mom.
He saved his mom. You do him one favor, but you continuously do this, and then you put the guy up for a fucking promotion. I would have been like, no, buddy, we gave you a chance. Pound fucking sand. Right? Like, there's so many...
Eventually, due to pressure, Clinton asks Malik to resign, and he resigns, and he gives Malik a high-paying job with his one of his foundations.
Well, if you're a coroner, I would pretty sure, like, because he ruled those other things, like, he knows where the bodies are buried, and he could potentially testify.
Yeah.
And if he went missing, then it would probably be a bigger problem than if they just kind of paid him off.
Yeah, he's a guy you have to keep happy at that point, in my eyes. Like, he knows too much, and he's too well involved.
What I'm saying.
So, oh, no, totally. That totally makes sense.
But then when you have the governor who's looking out for you, giving you jobs at, like, I need you to resign now, but here, have this other high-paying job in one of my foundations, you're looking after the guy. Like, there's friends or not or whatever, like, it's not a good look. And when you start to look into, like, the amount of friends that Clinton does favors for and stuff, like, this one kind of sent me down that rabbit hole, and I'd love to do some conspiracy around the Clintons.
Well, the Clinton kill count is an unbelievable conspiracy.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of that stuff is questionable.
Still, a lot of their names do come up in quite a few.
And a lot of it's been disproven.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of it, Dan. You just wait.
So okay. I got one other theory. This was reading all the material. Kevin Ives' father, Larry Ives, is coincidentally a conductor for Union Pacific, which is one of the trains, like the train that ran over the boys. And in my head, like, you know how, like, we all hear up here, like, you know, the shoremen are a little corrupt, like the longshoremen, there's some corruption and stuff with bringing stuff into ports. You always hear those rumors and whispers around that, you know, there's a little bit of corruption in the shoremen. Not saying there is, whatever. I'm just saying that's what we hear. In a state like this where the drugs are running so rampant at the time, I always wonder if some of, like, the trains were being used and utilized to, like, move drugs. And I want to look into this further of the other two boys that were died on the tracks, but Larry Ives, he is a conductor, and he drove those tracks sometimes. That wasn't his shift. But I always wondered. I always just popped into my head. I was like, I wonder if they were sending a message. I wonder if someone was sending a message, putting those boys on that track.
See, and that makes
right?
sense.
Like
to
maybe,
me.
Like maybe he was. They're like,
right?
Hey,
like,
we
there
got
was
this.
No, nothing quiet.
I'm not
about
saying
that.
He was involved. I'm not saying he's involved in any way, but I'm saying that, like, maybe someone else was like, yeah, this Larry Ives guy, you know, he won't get in on board, whatever. And completely unbeknownst to him, they're like, well, send a fucking message to him.
Yeah. Sending a message, maybe.
Send a message, right? That's what popped in my head when I started reading that case. And in no way am I saying Larry Ives is involved at all. I'm saying he was probably an innocent party if that's the case. I'd like to know.
I'm not sure. I'd like to know how many people ship cocaine on trains.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is, like, if you're in Arkansas or whatever, and there's so many people on the take here, you've got planes fucking driving at night, dropping stuff, like, how hard would it be to get some conductors, like, on the take, right? Like,
Why wouldn't you just move it by trucks, though? It'd be easier.
I don't know.
You can't stop various the trains unless you... I don't know. That'd be a.
I think that would just be too. I don't know how many drug operations have run out of rail yards before.
I know.
That'd be a good
there
thing
go.
To look
there
up.
There you
though.
Go. It's that secretive. We got no idea, man.
We have no idea.
Train's been doing this shit the whole time.
Exactly. What's everyone's final thoughts on this one, Zell? What do you think? What do you think happened to those boys?
Well, I'm pretty much on the same board as. These guys got involved in something. They either seen something or in the wrong place at the wrong time and people got rid of them. It does seem a little sloppy how they got rid of them, but maybe because they kind of knew that they could get away with it because they've got away with it so many times that they kind of gotten sloppy. And if it does go up to Clinton And it does go, because now we're talking, now you're starting to talk about like a shadow government, people who can put people in political power.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay, Clinton, if you go ahead with this, like that's just another couple points for you towards being president, you know, joining the elite club. But at that point now, who are those telling Clinton, like, okay, if you do this, we'll get you in office. But yeah, no, I'm 100% on board. There's too many things that add up to it being, well, a fucking murder, obviously. But I don't know exactly. It's unsolved. Something happened. Huge cover up, grand conspiracy. It ran deep through this town. And if it does go up the political ladder all the way up to like the governor of the state, I don't know. Is there any conclusion? Was there anything found of like drug rings in the area, or they could still be going on to this day?
Well, like you had the MENA Intermountain Municipal Airport that was being used to like ship cocaine, guns, and money from Central America through Arkansas. So like there was all this stuff like this was a known area for like being used by the CIA as well. They found like clandestine like methamphetamine labs. There's tons of drug activity in this area.
They're probably still cooking meth out there. It is Arkansas.
Like if you're listening, you're from Arkansas, like you must hear the whispers. If you're hearing the whispers, let us know. I want to know, like, does this stuff still go on there? Like, do you hear these rumblings of like these, you know, like these drug things that you just don't get involved with, right? Like, you don't get involved with. Like, it's just trouble. If you go around asking questions and stuff like that, like, I'm interested. I want to know.
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just curious.
No, Braden's going to come down there like Dwayne The Rock Johnson and yeah. Walking Tall and going to come down there.
Break
some
2x4. I'm going to run for mayor.
Jack the truck.
But like, you know, like how we say, like, it's so sloppy if it was, you know what I mean? One of, you know, if it was somebody high up was involved like Clinton. But you think about it, like, what happens if they just entrusted the wrong guy to take care of this stuff? And by the sounds of everything we've learned about this Don Harmon guy, he's the wrong fucking guy.
Buddy, it sounds like he was doing the drugs the whole time. Like, oh, fuck.
Exactly. He was a known drug addict. And all while he was a piece of shit doing the drugs, beating his wife, he was also having a day job as a fucking prosecutor. So he could obviously, you know, put on a show like he was a competent human being. But, you know, who's to say this guy wasn't high on fucking meth when he did this? When his girlfriend was high on meth? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a pretty good meth plan, being like, hey, man, I got a great idea. Let's fucking, let's stab him, beat him, and throw him on the fucking
tracks. Put him on the tracks.
Just put him on the tracks. It's cool. It'll work. It's all good.
Right? You know, and then Then they make a mess of it. It goes all the way up. Then everyone's getting involved, right? We need Malik. We need our contacts at the police, right?
Well, exactly. It gets back to Clinton, and Clinton's the guy that's saying, hey, you know what? You guys can use Arkansas. I want your guys' political power. I want you guys to back me. You know what I mean? Okay, shit, we have these dead kids. I know a guy, Fahmy Malik. He's covered up stuff in the past for me. He helped out my mom. Let's get him on the case.
Yeah. He's on the tape,
isn't he,
right?
Like, obligated to be on the case because, like, he's county coroner, medical examiner?
Well, even better. Perfect. You're like, all right, we got a guy. Like, and he makes a call like, hey, this was accidental. Click.
Let's call the guy who's already elected to the position.
Well, he's already in fucking Clinton, or Clinton's already in his pocket. He's already fucking got control over this guy.
But doesn't the guy have control over Clinton because he did the favor for Clinton?
It goes both ways, man. What comes around is all around.
And also, like, it just makes sense to me that, like, if they're like, okay, they fucked it up. They're like, okay, Malik, like, we need you to rule this one. They make a phone call, right? This one's going to come down the pipe to you. It's accidental. He's got this autopsy. He's looking. I think it's pretty, from what I've read, is like some minor THC was found in the system. Some people say maybe two joints worth.
Yeah.
Him not really knowing marijuana. As
20.
Perfect. Perfect. This is what I'll use, right? They did too many marijuana cigarettes, right? Marijuana's got this really bad stereotype at the time. Perfectly, right? 20
well,
marijuana
cigarettes.
You said
he,
marijuana
he misread
cigarettes.
That one report. Maybe he misread this one.
Yeah, right? But he's just a lovable
and then he
oaf.
Just didn't want to back down.
He's
he
not even involved.
Back down.
They're just like, we need to put this guy's corner because he's so fucking stupid. That he doesn't even know what's going on. He's just never going to rule something a homicide. He doesn't believe people have it in them.
At this time, to say like, oh, they smoked 20 cigarettes, like that, they don't know any THC content. They don't know enough. That's just like a random guess. That's fucking nothing.
Yeah, it's he's probably like,
I don't know, 20 marijuana 20, cigarettes.
Yeah, 20, like, I guess. Must have smoked at least 20.
That sounds good, right?
So, this one's a great one for me because it's like, as you start digging, you're like digging into this one, you're like, oh shit, like all the people that were involved in this are bona fide scumbags. Everyone, the prosecutors, the coroners, like the sheriff's office at the time, like law enforcement involved, everyone. And you're like, they're like fucking known sheriffs. Scumbags now. So then you're like, it leads me to believe that if they're outed now as scumbags, if they're outed, I'm like, they didn't just all of a sudden start like boom after this incident. I was like, I think they were scumbags well before this. I think this is the only one where they were sloppy enough that it kind of muddied them all. You know what right. I mean? Like they fucked up so bad on this one, everyone got mud in their face. So it kind of left everyone exposed.
So they like maybe they did like 20 before and they slowly got sloppy on this one. They hired the wrong guy or wrong couple guys and it just
knocked
all the dominoes
over. Someone got sloppy. Someone got sloppy. That's what I think. I think from everything I've read and looked at, like, do I believe that Clinton was directly involved in these kids being killed? No. But I think something came across his desk being like, hey, this is what happened. Something's happened. We're exposed. We're exposed on this one, right? These people that we're have ties with, I don't like to think that Bill Clinton's just like, yo, hey, Bill, what should we do with these two kids we found on the tracks? I'll fucking kill them. I don't think that call happened. I think a call was made to kill those kids, put them on the tracks, and then they went, hey, this happened. And they went, why the fuck would you do that? And it got all the way up to Bill, and Bill goes, whoever pushes reports to Bill goes, we're exposed on this. We need to act fast. That's what I think happened. Do I think he was directly involved in this? I think maybe he's just at the head of it. I don't think he's making those small day-to-day calls.
He's just one of the money guys.
Yeah, I think it came across that said, hey, we're exposed. And then they started just paying everyone, right? Do this, do this, do this. Shut that down. Harmon, you need to get in there. You need to put yourself in the middle of this, right? Get us who knows, who can expose us, who's going to backstab us, right? Just give us those names.
Everything about this to me comes across as like fucking just, I had the word, I fucking lost it, but like spur of the moment decision making. You know what I mean? Like they didn't have time to decide. We saw these kids, we're exposed, we need to kill them now. What are we going to do with their bodies? Let's throw them on the fucking railroad tracks.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem thought out. This doesn't seem planned. You know what I mean? This seems like a spur of the moment fucking decision that they made, especially without the higher ups being aware of it.
That's what I think. Yeah. That's what I think.
Me too. I completely agree with you.
I don't know like how far you could say it could go up. Because if you're going to go ahead and make the assumption that this is, well, like if you're going to say the CIA were involved, this feels just like a drug ring. This feels just like, like what the kids saw something they weren't supposed to see. And this feels like a really shitty, like drug gang operation, because all those people that the witnesses that were, you know, that were knocked off one by one, they were all killed. One of them disappeared.
Yeah.
Right. So, but they were killed, and you know, if it were the CIA, you would have never seen those people again. They would have just disappeared. They wouldn't be dead, right? You wouldn't put the risk of like, you know, the coroner like growing a conscience or something like that. They'd be gone.
They'd be missing. They'd be missing. Kate.
Or their suicides would have looked like suicides, because the CIA does have an assassination handbook.
Yeah.
So like, they have trained assassins to
now,
do that shit.
What about this? So maybe the CIA was involved in the drug rings. In 86, you know, 85, 86, 87 with Barry Seals, they're bringing stuff in. They started to get heat. The CIA pull out their support. They're like, whoa, things are getting too hot for us. We pull out. Barry Seals gets pinched. All these people, all their operation gets done. But there's enough people that were still involved that are like, hey, fuck it. We can do it ourselves. We don't need them. We don't need their resources. We now have the connections, right? We kind of know what we're doing. And then they just take over trying to replicate the exact same thing the CIA was funding, except without any of the CIA backing, and everyone's doing the drugs.
So you've seen, it was an old CIA operation that was taken over by a gang of misfits.
Well, it's like, I think it's pretty well known that the CIA was running operations in Arkansas with like bringing drugs in and out, right, from the Central America.
Countless cases of, yeah, that kind of stuff.
I mean, that was the whole Iran-Contra thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they were flying drugs to Arkansas to fly weapons back. Actually, they were using the drugs as a cover for flying weapons to the Contras in like Nicaragua and like in Costa Rica and things like that. So there was that.
But there's the money and the drugs, right? So it's like, fuck the guns.
I don't know when it stopped. I don't know when those operations stopped. I'm not 100% on when those operations stopped.
I think the CIA allegedly stopped backing them around 86. I don't know 100%, but that was my thought, is it was just before, because they pinched, they let Barry Seals like take the fall, and he died in 87? He died in 86. So, yeah, he got killed in 86 by a gunshot wound. So I think they kind of, because he was working for them allegedly, right? And they pulled the support, and then he kind of fell off and, you know, was subsequently killed. But I think that maybe there was enough people involved when the CIA was meddling that maybe they were like, hey, like, why stop? We can do this. We don't need them. We can just keep it going, right? They have all the same connections. You know, people were on the take. They had pilots. And so they start doing it themselves. But it's like a bad movie, right? They think they can do it, but everyone's on the drugs, right? So they're on their own supply. And then things get sloppier and sloppier and sloppier, right? And there's enough people still connected in these high-ranking offices from when the CIA was involved that they're like, we're exposed because these fucking idiots that we were involved with earlier are now trying to do it themselves. And they have enough dirt on us from when we were all doing it together that we could be exposed here.
So why not just kill those people?
Yeah, it's fair.
Touché.
Touché. Good point, Dan. I don't know.
All right, well, we're pretty much all in agreement.
Just kill everybody.
We're all in agreement that it's probably some type of drug cartel ring.
Let's close the book on this one for now. You know, it's still open thing. You know, there could be new developments, so we might retouch on it later. Stuff.
We did this on Alien Theorist Theorizing, so there's no supernatural or ET connections to this. This is a straight corruption.
This is straight corruption conspiracy.
Don't do too many of those.
Straight government corruption.
Little ATT true crime coming at you.
Well, government conspiracy. Government cover-up. Much like 9/11.
0.5%.
Just like it. Just like it.
Do we say aliens at the end? Maybe aliens.
Aliens put them on the tracks.
Are we covered?
Yeah. I think so.
Yes.
We're covered.
Yeah, I'd accept that.
All right, let's get into some 5-star reviews.
Getting open into them?
Yeah.
Getting into them.
Open.
We're getting into them.
Okay. It's opening. It's like the tab's been closed so long that it like auto-reloaded. And it's just, I had like a million tabs opened. All right. All right, here we go. Listen to your husband. 5-star review by Dragon Horde Yarn, June 4th. My husband has not shut up about this podcast for about a year now. He was right, goddammit. Thank you guys for the awesome podcast. I like that.
He hasn't shut up about this podcast for a whole year. That's amazing.
Goddammit, I like it.
That's great.
Finding humor and entertainment in the unknown. 5-star review from Rate Nerd from USA. Just want you guys to know how much I enjoy the show. The show is just like how me and my buddies talk about this stuff. Open-minded with a healthy amount of skepticism. Even though I have personally seen and experienced craziness and sleep paralysis, we cut up about it all the time. Fun times. Keep up the good work, guys, and I'll keep listening. Semper Fi. Shout out by Maddie B. 2011, 5-star review. So I just started listening a few weeks ago and I've loved the show. So funny. Hope you guys are still doing shout outs for 5 stars. My favorite guys are Andrew and Zell. So Woo! Funny. I'm Woo! Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure you on episode 27. He's on episode 27. Well, no love for Braden, but that's fine. All right.
No love for Braden this time.
Least favorite.
Least favorite Braden.
The Truth Is Out There by And How, 5-star from United States. Are we alone in the universe? Impossible. When you consider the wonders that exist all around us, voodoo priests of Haiti, the Tibetan numerologists of alopecia, the unsolved mysteries of unsolved mysteries. The truth is out there, and it's in Canada. Extremely funny, kind of informative, but most importantly, these guys will become your new best friends while discussing the unknown. That's Ooh, fucking
did it say
right,
alopecia?
Yeah, alopecia? I don't know. I may have said alopecia.
Or what? Alopecia is hair loss.
I've got baldness on the brain, man. It's
Wait, was it alopecia or was it Appalachia?
Appalachia? Did I say alopecia?
What, that's Tibetan numerologists of Appalachia. Appalachia is like here in the United States. It's like East Coast.
Appalachian Mountains that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like West Virginia.
The Tibetan numerologist.
Mama.
Now we're referred to as
Appalachia. Of alopecia.
Of Alopecia Mountains.
All right. That's all I'm going to read for 5-star reviews. We've got a ton of 5-star reviews. So thanks, guys. We really appreciate those.
I was going to read some on Facebook, but I couldn't get a word in there. So let's keep going.
Go ahead.
No, I said I was going to read some off Facebook, but I couldn't get a word in.
Oh, go ahead. Read some off Facebook.
No, let's do it. We'll do them next time.
That's all I was going to read off the website. You can read one off Facebook. You don't even have it up. He's bullshit.
I'll do one off Facebook. By far the best podcast around. Can't recommend it more. Hilarious, great info, and genuinely brilliant. 5 out of 5 stars doesn't seem enough. From Sean Young Wolf Duffy. Thanks, brother. Peace. Appreciate it. What else we got? What else we got, dude? What else
new
we
patrons.
Do? Oh, yeah.
The patrons.
Patrons.
God. Siraj Amderson, Brendan Morrissey, Marmon, Daniel Sam, Humanismu, Rob Buckley, Nicholas Worrell. Nicholas Worrell.
Nicholas.
Jacob Carey.
Nicholas.
Jillian. Melissa Jeffrey, Amy Brutnell. Let's give him one more. Black Ron Pond. I know we said that one last time, but I'll say it again. That's all I got for.
That's because he increased his pledge like a genius, and he got read twice.
Yeah, that's all good.
Clever.
Into it.
Clever man. We got to talk about one thing that we haven't really talked about yet. Prolapsers has been extinguished.
It's been vaulted.
It, but we have
been,
not
put it in the
they've
vault.
They've been retracted?
Retract? The prolapsers have been retracted.
Yeah.
If you listened to this case file before episode 100, then you're an OG prolapser. But now, for reasons we cannot disclose, we have to change the names of the people who listen to this show. I don't know. Should we just like put out like an open thing, or should we just name it right now?
Oh, well,
should we just call everybody the Theory Nation or something?
No, that's so lame.
I know we've been.
Everyone's
I wish we could have kept the Junior Theorist because I like that one. I wish we could have kept that.
That'd be something hilarious. Something.
Those are that's but that's our Patreon tier now. It's you call everybody Junior Theorists.
Zell, you got a prolapse of the week?
We're not doing prolapse of the week. We just talked about that right before you said that.
Did I?
Yeah, we're not doing prolapse.
You're not using that word anymore.
Oh, sorry. Damn it. Zell's person of the week.
Nope. We're not going to do it. Person of the week until we get a new name. So
okay.
It's all good.
Right. And then
my mind is blown. It's like, what? Fabric of reality is tearing in front of me.
This place. None of you fuckers deserve it.
It's okay. I give myself back to back person of the week.
Three in a row when I was gone.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, anything else? Anything else we got to talk about before we sign off on this one?
Oh, follow us, alientheorist.com. Support us on Patreon, social media. You can find us anywhere.
Anything else? Anything else before I sign this one off?
Oh, that is it.
All right. And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.